This is Aspen Public Radio. Good evening. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and welcome to a live debate from the Red Brick Arts Center. For the next hour, we will be hearing from the two candidates who are running for the only contested Pitkin County Commissioner seat. The candidates are Greg Poschman and Scott Ryder. To start off, the two candidates will debate each other. After that, I will ask them a series of questions, and I will open it up to the audience and those who are on social media. Due to technical difficulties, we were unable to get the first portion of Greg Poschman's answer about what he would do to affordable housing. We enter with Scott Ryder's response, and then Greg again reiterating his position and ideas on affordable housing.
I've heard sort of what I think might be conflicting policies. You want affordable housing all the way down to Glenwood, but you're an advocate for the keeping it in the urban growth boundary. You want to put affordable housing everywhere, but only in the urban growth boundary and only outside of Pitkin County? Does it count as growth if it's outside of Pitkin County? Is it smart growth to put it further down valley where people will have to commute further? And in terms of being in the wrong race, I think that you're mistaken. The housing issue is just not in the city and just not for city employees. This housing issue is huge. It extends not just in Pitkin County, it extends beyond Pitkin County. And so I think that everywhere we can go, but I'm debating you. So you have to answer, I guess, my question about how do you reconcile being an urban growth boundary only advocate, but putting housing all the way down to Glenwood?
First of all, I reconcile it by saying, first of all, I like to go where the money is and where the energy is. And I think the energy and the money is with the city of Aspen. So if you want to build housing in Aspen for people who want it in Aspen, then it has to be up here. Regarding moving housing down valley, certainly along transportation corridors, in areas where we have infrastructure already, we have urban growth boundaries in the municipalities up and down the valley. Aspen has one, Basalt has one, Carbondale, those areas have them. And I think that it's much less expensive to build housing within those boundaries than to build without.
So now do I go with the 2 minutes?
Scott, respond.
We'll just keep going. Okay, cool. So, well, I disagree with Greg that the money's only in Aspen. I would agree that that's the way it has been. But from my perspective, the county hasn't been doing its share on housing. And I want the county to step up and start charging more mitigation fees. I want the county to investigate as many different options as possible. Within 20 years, 63% of the people who are living in affordable housing, they're going to be retirement age or older. And if we only put that housing in the urban growth boundary or way down valley, we're creating more problems than I think we're solving. In Woody Creek, they have a master plan that I think is pretty darn cool. And one of the things they said in Woody Creek is they said, we'll do our share on affordable housing. They said, don't jam it down our throat with big developers or big government. Let us do it as individuals. I see that as a great opportunity where we can work with some of the people in Woody Creek to create opportunities for them to enrich themselves partially by creating some affordable housing for us, and then also then creating that unit for people to live in. So with 63% of our residents in affordable housing, they're going to be in 20 years. There's not a lot of room left in the city for that. And I want to keep the retirees here. I want to keep, because I think they're a vital force and a vital part of this community. So I think it's important for us to not only keep the retirees, but also create these opportunities for the youth to get into it. I have a whole list of specifics that I could get to if we get back to it.
Okay. Greg, would you like to respond to this?
The only response I have is that, you know, for the last 40 plus years, we've done a lot of work. The previous commission and others in the community have done a lot of work to limit growth and keep growth down. It sounds like what you have is a recipe for making the county perhaps the largest developer in the county and spurring growth. I know we need affordable housing. How much is the question? How much is enough? Is there a top end of it? And do we want to see a county that is doing an awful lot of building or reversing its policy of growth control and limiting growth? I'm basically for managed, controlled, measured growth, and affordable housing plays a big part of it. But when you talk about being able to house everybody who wants to stay or would like to live here, I'm just not sure that that's possible.
So I think, you know, I did not say that I thought the county should build this. In fact, to the contrary, the example I gave actually was Woody Creek residents building it. But I believe that the city has come up with a great housing credit program where private developers build it, and that would be a similar program I would do. You know, one of the interesting things I think is that outside of the urban growth boundary in Pitkin County unincorporated is 93% built out. That's not including the city of Aspen. That's 93% built out. The county itself is around 50 to 60% built out, depending on whether you call it by what's by there by right or what's likely. So you can say that you're no growth, and that sounds great politically, and it looks great and sounds great in a debate, but about 50% of unincorporated county is going to be developed into something. I think we should be trying to develop it more into affordable housing and not free market housing. I think that what we should be trying to do is create opportunities for locals who don't have as much to live in that area, not just the high-end locals.
Greg, would you like to respond? And then Scott will have the final word on this.
So okay,
any
sure.
Last points you want
to
make?
I'd like to hear more about this because it sounds like you've got some great ideas. I'm concerned that what you're what we're talking about is buying down free market. Is that right? Are we going to buy free market property down in the county and elsewhere in order to build more affordable housing? Where's the money going to come from? Who's going to pay for it? How will it be done? You know, we have the most successful affordable housing program in perhaps the world already in this valley. We've built 3,000 affordable housing units. We're the model and the envy of the country, so I know we know how to do some things right, but then you reach a point where you just wonder, what's the correct mix? How much is enough? I posit that we have an unlimited number of people who would love to come in here and get into affordable housing. What do you think about that? Is there an upper limit to it?
Absolutely. I actually think that my experience and that I've been working on this for 30 years since I was the chairman of Voice of Youth Concerns, which is a youth advocacy group for young adults back in the late 80s. This has been something I've been living and breathing because I've been trying to figure out how to live here too. And so I've been doing this for a long time and thinking about it. And what I'm not going to sit here and pretend is I have all the answers or I know everything. What I do know is that if a lot of us sit around the table and try to figure it out, we can. I am for buying down free markets with RO. I am for trying to amend current policies so retirees can move down in the affordable housing program and partially cash out without having them to requalify, because they won't, because they're not working. I am for creating an incentive program for owners to appropriately renovate their units and make some money on the deal and be able to incentivize them to move and then buy those units down. We can buy down 10 to 20 units for every one we build. We need to create incentives for people to move into units that are appropriately sized, but not make them and not cow them into it. I think that we can find ways. Why do we reserve profit just for the people who own free market? I think we can come up with some strategies so that the young people in this community can get into affordable housing, make a little money, move up, and become active, and I mean, they're already active, but become successful parts of the community and use housing to do it.
Thanks. We're going to move on to the entrance to Aspen, and Scott, you'll start this one off, so Greg will have the final word on this mini debate, which I remind you guys it's 2 minutes to start off and then a minute, but I'm flexible in letting you go back and forth.
So on the entrance,
let me just state that
sorry,
there's been nearly 40 votes on this issue over the decades. So I think most residents want to know what the county can do to fix this problem, or is it just not fixable and we should just leave it the way it is?
Personally, I believe it's fixable. The 40 votes have largely shown us that we have two voter blocks of about 50%. And whenever one voter block loses, the other voter block blocks them. I believe this is a fixable thing. Now, I'm not a big study guy. Well, I guess maybe I believe in studies at some level. But the current study that they're doing, I really do believe in. I think it's going to be effective. I think it's going to help us. It's not just a light rail study. It's a study about all sorts of things. And one of the things that it's going to do is, as I understand the way it works, is it's going to study and track cell phones that people have in their pockets while they're driving around. This will give us some really great information that we've never had before. I also think that it's really important that we do understand what the future holds in terms of transportation, and that's part of this study as well. I mean, I'm an old guy, so I kind of have a hard time with some of this new technology stuff, like my three-ring binder, perhaps. But at the end of the day, I really think that it'd be valuable to understand how those work. And also, this study, I think, is going to give political cover to those who need it, because they don't want to take an unpopular position, and I think it'll give them the political cover to take it. I think we need to use this study to actually make progress on it. I think it's a real problem. I think it hurts locals, and I think it hurts our business. And so I think it's really important that we make a really strong effort to do something about it.
Great. Greg?
Okay. regarding entrance to Aspen, it's a complicated situation, as Scott has well described. We have CDOT, the Colorado Department of Transportation, has a say in this. The city does, the county does. And yes, we've had the 40 votes. But all these solutions, all the things the votes have come up cannot change effect. Every car driving up here drives into really what is in effect kind of a box canyon in the winter. No solution we have is going to change, and no amount of government spending is going to change that we have a box canyon with a lot of amenities at the end of it and a lot of people who want to get to it. The cost of doing things is very high. The cut and cover solution, which I believe was the approved alternative solution at one point, was that the cost might have been up around $300 million to do to do this project. It just seems much too expensive, and all we're really doing is moving the bottleneck up or down a little bit. We're not really solving a big problem. If the bottleneck, the dead end, is at the S curve or at the original curve, is it really going to matter? So I think we've got false choices regarding the entrance to Aspen. It could be that we need traffic slowing. We need to come up with better ways to keep it moving. And I always like to ask myself, if we didn't have a lot of cash to do this, how would we try to solve the problem? And there are solutions that have been tried, and some of them have worked to an extent in the past. If you could remove the stoplight at Cemetery Lane, for instance, during commuter hours, that could make a difference and have the traffic flow that way. The other thing Scott mentions is correct. Our technology is changing so rapidly that we don't know what's going to come in the next few years. If you look at your cell phone and see how it's evolved in the last 5 years, we're already at driverless cars, we're at autonomous vehicles. Things are going to change very quickly, and I'm worried about choosing one solution and finding out it's outdated by the time it gets here.
And you're looking at my cell phone, and you see that you had 2 minutes.
Yeah, look at that.
I think the threshold question here really is how many more people would drive to Aspen if it was easy? Right now, it's not easy. And traffic has largely been used as the tool to prevent traffic. And that doesn't seem to have worked. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a lot of people say the traffic is so bad I'm not going to drive. I don't know. But I think this new study is going to show what really the patterns are and how it works. I think it's going to give us a lot of answers. And so before I would even attempt to try to pick a side or pick a solution, I want to see that. I mean, my heart's in the non-asphalt solutions. Asphalt solutions may be one of the things we have to consider. I don't really know what it's going to be, but I really do believe it's time for one of us to act. When one of us gets elected, we should be going in there and really trying to make a difference, because this is driving a lot of people crazy.
Greg, response? This is the final.
Certainly. Back to the rail. I understand that the rail solution, even if it's just from the intercept lot, is an astounding number. It's over $600 million, I think. So we're looking at very, very big, expensive budgets for solutions. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up. Speaking of using the cell phone tracking, you can already do that. If you go to Google Traffic, you can find out where the hotspots are on the map, and you can actually time your approach to Aspen or up and down Valley just by looking at Google Traffic now. That technology is here today. I've heard about some autonomous vehicle systems that actually connect and become de facto trains and then separate as they need to. These technologies are arriving so quickly. I can't say I want to rely entirely on the future, but it's coming so quickly. I'd be very hesitant to go for a train now and know in 5 years it's out of date.
Great, thanks. Well, I'm going to break format a little bit and say I don't think you need any technology at all if you go stand at the S-curves. you'll see every construction vehicle and service truck going through there. So my question to you guys, minute response, is how do you get those guys out of their cars?
I think I don't want to sound flip about it, but I think it's relatively simple. It all comes down to economics. When someone applies for a building permit and gets it, they have to submit a construction management plan that includes parking. They get charged a fee in the city of Aspen. I think it's like $10 a day. Increase the fee. Also increase the opportunities to create park and ride, store and share locations for the construction group. Another component of the construction management plan that could be enforceable, I think, are the hours that the building occurs. Stagger that. Stagger it so that it's more effective. But I think what's really important, well, okay, that'll answer it, I think, for me.
Greg?
I think the interesting thing I heard from Scott there was mitigation. If I know the city has a moratorium on building now, which I think is probably necessary, and the county could probably put a moratorium on some of the building, or at least so we get a grip on the construction traffic coming in. But you're also talking about service traffic. I was told that some of the big houses we have here have regular visits on a daily basis, even if the owners aren't here. Maybe they have a dozen trips a day coming to and from the houses. You've got all the various people servicing it. There really isn't a great solution because the people working on these places can't leave their tools on site. They really have to take them with them. Just like the soccer moms and the dads who are taking all the kids out, it's pretty hard to get people out of their cars. So I'm just not certain we have a quick and easy solution for that.
Thanks. Let's move on to the last debate topic, which is development and growth. You know, population pressures and property owner rights continue to put land use decisions in front and center with the county commissioners. So, Greg, why don't you start with, you know, talking about where development is appropriate, when is it appropriate, your thoughts on the urban growth boundary, et cetera.
Well, we talk about, you know, the idealists talk about creating density and not having sprawl. That's been kind of the talk with development that I've heard over the years and I subscribe to. We have to have a certain measured, controlled amount of growth, and that's good, and it's necessary for our economy and for all of us to prosper. But it does have to happen with density. I believe density is going to be a better solution than sprawl. In our valley, we're unique in that we have a history of intense growth pressure. We have an unlimited amount of money coming in, looking for speculation, and we have a seemingly unlimited number of people who want to move here. This place is heaven. When they find it, they want to live here, and you can't blame them. And I'm going to have to say, you know, we're all part of growth, and we're all part of development, and not all developers are bad people. We need them. They do good work. But we also must realize we have an intense pressure to grow from population and money coming in. I think the commissioner is going to be the last line of defense, the focus and the mouthpiece for the community, so the community can have some say when we have these intense pressures coming up regarding growth. We can expect a doubling of our state population in the near future. We're going to have climate refugees, economic refugees, Zika refugees. They're all going to be coming to Colorado, and they're all going to want to live in Aspen. How are we going to do that? What can Pitkin County voters decide to do about that?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Greg on that. I absolutely believe that we should control growth as absolutely much as possible. As I mentioned before, the unincorporated portions of Pitkin County outside of the urban growth boundary are somewhere between 50 and 60% built out. So if we leave the codes as they are today, we're going to end up with 50 to 40% more homes. Now, presently, what's happening with this is that the homes that are being built are larger and more high-end. That's the codes don't request that, but that's what you get from the current codes. In my mind, and I've had a lot of experience with codes, I've looked at codes all around the world, and I've been watching and reading the codes here in Pitkin County and Aspen for decades. And I believe that what we should be trying to do is to tweak those codes, maybe more than tweak, overhaul those codes, so that they emphasize development for the affordable housing groups and the community people, not just for the free market and slash out-of-towners or high-enders. Look, I have nothing against the second homeowners or the high-enders. I mean, those folks help us support what we love, and I'm all for them. But at the end of the day, we don't have a lot of room left, and we got to make damn sure that when by the time we get to build out, we have what we really need. To me, housing is sort of like an ecosystem, and if there's one break in the system, it makes it very difficult for people to move up and to move down. My goal is to try to create a housing system that people can get into it at any level, and they can move up and they can move down in that system however their needs require. I think that's going to create the opportunity for success for young people and the opportunity for retirees to stay here when they need to partially cash out and they don't want to just move.
Thanks. Greg, it's your last.
My concern, once again, is just that it would be possible to grow in any direction as much as we want to, as much as we can. I've talked a lot about that. There's something called the theory of attractiveness. I'm going to talk about the brand here. People will move to nice places until they bring down the attractiveness. When will we have reached the tarnished? When will we have tarnished our brand? When will we have made this place less interesting to be and live? That's a big question I have. Albert Schweitzer, when he was here, a philosopher, said, "We often fail to foresee and forestall that which is going to tarnish us, to tarnish the quality of life here." And so I think we have to be very careful thinking we're going to solve any problem by building more and bigger, whether it's smaller housing or whether it's free market housing. I'm concerned that we are going to try to build our way out of this problem, and that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and that's not at all what I said. I agree with you. We can't build our way out. There's no way we can accommodate everyone who wants to be here, and nor should we. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, what are you going to do about the undeveloped 50 to 60% that ties into what you're saying, which is no growth?
When you talk about undeveloped 50 or 60%, are you speaking of private land? Which land are you speaking of? And what says that it should be developed? Perhaps it's already agricultural and should stay?
There are 1,500. I talked to Cindy Hubin, the director of community development. I asked her, how far away are we from build out? Cindy told me we are about 50 to 52% built out. She said the likely build out is we're about 60% built out. Now what that means, if I understood this correctly, is that there are over 1,000 units left to be built in the free market in unincorporated Pitkin County per current zoning. Now, that's not me saying pro build. That's not me saying we can build our way out of it. What I'm hearing is you saying you want to stop building, so how are you going to stop all those units from being built? And wouldn't it be better if they were geared more towards affordable housing and community members?
That's an interesting question. And I'm not going to be able to give you a satisfactory answer with that right now. I think that my biggest worry, here's my feeling about creating, if we get the mix wrong, if we have an affordable housing system that does not give people the sense of autonomy and freedom and a sense that they are, that they're free enough to live without being in a caste system. I worry about affordable housing only because we create a caste system with it. If we have and continue on this track, I'm concerned about it. I want kids to get a sense that they are just as free and able to do what they want to do regarding housing and regarding their lives as anybody in the free market, and I don't see that now. So I'm afraid of saying we're going to build this valley out with affordable housing.
Yeah, you're right. That wasn't a satisfying answer for me. I think the mix currently is wrong. I think that we should be converting those free markets into affordable in whatever way we can. I think we should be trying to put this affordable housing throughout the county, not in just in the urban growth boundary, particularly as we have retirees hitting this community hard in terms of what they need for housing. If we try to just keep leaving everything where it is, pretty soon it's just going to be an old folks home. And I'm not for that. I want to see young, happy. I want to see partying. I want to see vibrancy. I want to see people getting after it. And it's the caste system is what we have now. We have employee housing at the lower levels and free market at the upper levels. What I'm suggesting is adding a middle market that can smash this glass ceiling that's on top of the employee housing, and that can actually smash this caste system. Instead of pitting haves against have-nots, create a single market that people can access and people can move up in. I think that's the way to move ahead.
Okay. So this conversation went back to affordable housing, and you know, I think the average resident wants to know how many 15,000 square foot houses you're willing to approve in the Castle Creek Valley or in the Capitol Creek Valley or wherever. That's the kind of growth that people are concerned about. It's not necessarily just affordable housing. So just if you can do it in 30 seconds or less, how many are you willing to let go through? Greg?
You know what? I would like to, honestly, I've had people tell me they think we should scrap the TDR program and take houses back down to some sort of reasonable size. I've also, one of the concerns I want to bring up is that I hear you saying you want to buy down free market housing and put it into an affordable program, and I simply don't understand where the money will come from to do that.
I can explain that.
Okay, go for it.
Do you want me to explain that or the 15,000 square foot thing?
15,000 square foot, and if you can do it in 20 seconds or less to respond
okay.
to Greg.
Well, there are always trade-offs. Would the Elk prefer to have one 15,000 square foot home on a 100-acre parcel? Or would they prefer to have five 3,000 square foot homes on that same 100 acres? Would we, with a 15,000 square foot home, maybe collect $500,000 to $1 million in mitigation fees that we could use to help us create better and more affordable housing? Or would we rather have the five 3,000 square foot homes that maybe create very little in mitigation fees? All I'm trying to point out is there
are trade-offs. Which would you prefer?
Well, it depends on the situation.
Okay.
It really does. I mean, I think it's appropriate that there are some large homes here. I think that there are parcels of lands that have been preserved by that. And I think that those folks bring in a lot of good money to help us. So I'm not automatically against large homes just for the sake of large homes. I am against them on small lots, for sure. But if we can create conservation spaces that help preserve lands for the wildlife, I think that's not a bad trade-off.
Okay, great.
Very quickly, regarding mitigation, I think that everything should be mitigated. I would like to see, no matter who develops it and what it is, I think mitigation should be a big part of this. And that's part of what could govern the rate of growth of our valley, the size of the houses, and the quality of the things being built. Whether it's our county building a building or the city, mitigation should be every part. No one should have a pass. If they're building employee housing, there should be mitigation for that. Because whenever you're going to build anything new, you're creating demands on infrastructure, on shopping, markets, roads, the whole thing.
Thank you. You are listening to Aspen Public Radio. This is a live debate from the Red Brick Art Center. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We are joined by the two candidates running for an open Pickens County Commissioner seat. We will be taking audience questions a little later, and you can join in the discussion by tweeting at Aspen Pub Radio or sending an email to barbara@aspenpublicradio.org. I do have a couple questions I want to get out, and then we will move on to the audience. Greg, this one's for you. You're on record telling the Aspen Daily News editorial board that John McBride, who owns property in the Capitol Creek Valley, encouraged you to run for office. McBride, in the past couple of years, has been in negotiations with the County Open Space and Trails Department to sell land or work some other development deal with the county. The McBride family are among some of your top donors, so if a deal resurfaces in front of the commissioners, should you recuse yourself if you are on that board?
You know, I think if it comes up to their deal, I probably would have to. And I don't have a problem with that. I know a lot of people in this town, as does Scott. We've both been here forever. Things will come up where you have to recuse yourself. I am not schooled on the McBride's issue. I do know that John has been involved in projects up and down the valley, from the development of Snowmass to the Airport Business Center to the North 40. And I do know that he's trying to come up with ways to preserve his property up there. I do know he had some contentious issues with open space and trails, and I've heard just a portion of it, quite honestly. He's a big fish in our pond here, so there would be times when I can imagine I would have to recuse myself, yes. But he is only one of my supporters. I have many, many supporters in all from all walks and demographic of the community, rich, poor, old, young. And the things that at some point you have to not recuse yourself and continue and make the tough decisions. I have supporters who are diametrically opposed politically. And I can see that if they say if you're successful as a candidate, maybe you're going to irritate half of your constituency at any given time. And I'm prepared to do that. I'm here and prepared to make tough choices.
Okay, thank you. Scott, do you support the city and county's plans to build a trail from the music school to the Country Day campus on Castle Creek Valley?
Absolutely, yeah, I think it's great. I mean, it's one of the, I'm a huge supporter of the Open Space and Trails program, and please vote yes on referendum 1A. Not just because it's open space and trails and recreation and preservation, but it's also growth control in a big way. In fact, that's the strongest growth control measure we really have. By buying free market properties and taking them out of the development pool, we control growth. I also believe that this is an example of being able to use open space and trails funds for a safe bikeway. And one of the things that I learned in going to those different measures is that, and I thought this was pretty cool and I hadn't thought about it, was that it actually starts to create a culture for the children who are riding up and down that trail, a culture of bike riding and not using automotive, not using cars. So I'm for it. I'm advocating for it being a priority and doing it as fast as possible, and I think it's awesome.
Thank you. Greg?
Yep, back to me. I think, once again, 1A, the Open Space and Trails Reauthorization, I am in favor of it. I've come out, I've been collecting signatures, and I encourage everyone to renew that fund.
What about this trail?
Moving on to the trail. The trail is an interesting thing. I've gotten an earful from both sides on this trail. And I'm going to say that the thought of spending $6 million for a two-third of a mile trail is pretty hard for me to swallow. I think it's 3,000 feet. It's a $6 million budget. Perhaps there's another way. Once again, I want to go back and say, if we didn't have the money, how would we solve this problem? I think no one is against seeing kids be able to ride their bikes and commute to school. Everyone is concerned about security. You're not going to find anyone pro or con on this issue who's not, you know, would be horrifying to think about something going wrong. Yet, we have some neighbors who, perhaps they're not NIMBYs, perhaps they're also just concerned about budgets. They're budget hawks. So I'd like to go back and look again and see if there are perhaps less expensive ways to get what we want is mobility for kids.
So okay, that's so a just, no?
I have a follow-up question
that's
here,
a no,
which
right.
is...
I didn't say
so
no
those,
to it. I said I'm
those
not
neighbors,
ready. Yeah.
Sure. One of which is one of your big
Correct.
Donors.
Correct, yeah, I have
right?
a donor, Dick Butera.
Right, who sued the county over this trail.
Right,
so
right.
I just want to make that
He did.
Clear.
Dick Butera sued the county 7 or 8 years ago. He had reasons which were compelling enough that he spent a lot of time and money and effort and energy in this. I think to the shock of some and many who didn't quite understand, but he had compelling reasons that he will probably pursue again. He's not the only one. There are others.
Okay.
We live in one of the richest communities in the world, and this would be a partnership between Aspen, the Music Festival, the Country Day, and Pitkin County, and I think we can figure out how to do it. Oh, I'm sorry, I got to respond.
No, that's we're on my questions asking you guys, but I just have a follow-up here for you, Greg.
Sure.
Which is, you were against the renewal of the open space tax, from what I can read in the Aspen Daily News on June 12th when you did a question and answer.
Can I answer that?
So, I mean, just, yeah, that's what I'm asking you. But it says, I cannot support the 25-year extension at this time, but I look forward to supporting it when the goals of the open space and trails return to preserving and protecting wildlands and habitat.
Right. I did say that. I did say at this time. Okay. So as I have evolved over the summer and as the open space and trail program has evolved and I've listened and learned, what we've seen change with open space and trails is a renewed focus on biodiversity, where they're going to, and they say they're going to have much more biological, ecological input, which goes back to the original Open Space and Trails program. In the early days, it was started by conservationists and ecologists who were concerned about preserving land. Then they added a component for access. We want to make sure there's access. But I think in the time since, their mission has crept a little bit. And we are acquiring land, but now we need to maintain it, so we need to move some of the money toward maintenance. But then there's also a big component where we want to start moving maybe from access to more developing. We're developing areas. And that has caused some red flags in the community. So yes, to me, I've always said stridently, preservation of open space and open space is very important to me. I've never wavered from that. But I wanted to say I hesitated until I understood more, until I could see if this program would start moving back toward its original intent, which was preservation of land.
Thank you. I'm being asked to, is there other people in the audience who want to ask questions? Right. I see a show of no hands at this point. Okay, there will be a couple. Okay. All right. We will get to you. Just I want to ask a couple more questions here.
Nice gotcha.
What's that?
Nice gotcha.
Well, it's something that came up, so I had to ask. Pitkin County is currently one of the biggest developers in town with its new administration building, a public safety building, a remodeled and expanded library, and now the plans to build a new airport terminal. You know, how do these projects line up with your values of slow growth? And, you know, what is the appropriate size for a terminal right now, today, like if you had to build it? Scott, you start.
So, I'm not a terminal expert. What I've learned in my three decades of work in this arena is that what you do is you hire people who are smart, then you give them your values, and you work with them to help create your values and put your values into the ultimate size of the terminal. What I do believe is that we do need a new terminal. The conditions we have our employees working in is pathetic. They're atrocious. We should improve that. And I do believe we need a new terminal. And, you know, there's so much talk about trying to emphasize the resort component of our economy and de-emphasize the real estate component. And I'm with that. And part of emphasizing the resort economy is doing a great airport, one that we can be proud of, one that serves our guests, one that serves our locals. One that addresses longer waiting times than the typical average airport. And by the way, folks, you know, one of the things that's going on here is that we need a new runway, sadly. It feels like we just did one, but we need a new runway to accommodate the next-gen planes. Delta's already, and how do these projects align with my slogan? Well, I mean, there's an airport there now, there's a terminal there now, and so I don't really perceive it as much of a difference. I mean, that is a place that needs to be improved, and that's what I'm for.
And as far as the other buildings that the county's developing?
If I would have been in charge of the county when this new office building came up, I would have been trying to figure out ways to put more of the facilities down valley to serve residents down valley more effectively. There clearly has to be the county seat here, and there, in my mind, has to be a new building of some size. I'm not sure the size we have. One of the things that I really have to say, though, is that we talk about employees and our treasury and employees. We got to put them in great workspaces. That's how you get great employees. That's how you keep great employees. And I think creating great workspaces is the right thing to do, not the wrong thing to do.
Greg, you're answering the question about the county being a big developer right now, and how does that line up with your slow growth?
There are several great subjects here, and you've given me 2 minutes. Is that correct to answer this?
I haven't even hit start yet.
And so. I didn't even get to all the issues, so you're covered.
I have to say, I do agree with Scott regarding the county building. It does seem large, especially since when the human resources and the accounting, a lot of the departments in the county moved down valley, I heard people in the county saying, boy, I wonder if we'll ever get them to move back up. Yeah. They're closer to their homes down valley. They're working out of an annex in the mid valley. They're still accessible to everyone. They can telecommute if they have to. Why are we bringing them back up here? But that horse has left the barn, as they say. Regarding the airport, I'm going to agree with Scott again that I think the airport does need renewal. It's a mess for many reasons. In the back, where people don't see, I guess, the infrastructure, the power plant, all that is failing. It's time for an upgrade. The current, as I understood, the airport was going to be somewhere around 50 to 80,000 square feet where we were. It was going to grow somewhat. The size has gone. In the plans they showed us, the beautiful plans they showed us, the size was at 160,000 square feet, which is maximum build out for, you know, that the FAA would allow. And so they reminded me of the developers and the builders who come in with the absolute biggest project they can show you because they know you're going to whittle them down. And I was disappointed to see that coming from our own county. Here's one other thing to think about. There's a new thing happening, kind of the equivalent of Uber for airplanes. Okay, this year I'm told that a charter company that does a kind of a ride-sharing system started an air service from Dallas to Aspen for a round-trip ticket price that wasn't egregiously higher than a regular price, and they didn't even land at our airport. They landed at the ABO and went on their way from there. I think our new airport's going to need to learn how to accommodate an entirely new type of ride-sharing flight system.
Thank you. And we're going to take a question that came over social media, which is, Pitkin County has a history of protecting the wilderness. Would you support designation of new wilderness in the county if you are elected? Scott, you can take that.
Yes, absolutely. Dorothea Ferris is a hero of mine and a long-term environmental warrior. I really think she's an amazing woman, and I'm so proud to have her support. She is a leader in terms of the Thompson Divide Alliance and the Wild and Scenic Crystal. And in talking about that and with the Wilderness Workshop, one of the ideas that came up is, what about doing Wild and Scenic on Maroon and Castle Creek to preserve our water rights instead of going through these water right games? When I asked the Wilderness Workshop, they kind of freaked out and looked at me and they said, well, but that might be really hard and take 10 years. And I said, well, if that's the best way to protect our water rights, maybe that's the best idea and we should roll up our sleeves and start on this 10-year process. In terms of expanding wilderness, it's a complicated question, of course, and you have to look at what is there now and who would be losing what they're used to using. But in general, philosophically, yes.
Greg?
Certainly. I'm a proponent of wilderness and wildlands. I'm not sure how much could be left within Pitkin County, some of Thompson Divide. It'd be great to have that in wilderness. The thing that I'd like to add, since we only have a minute, is that I would like to see Pitkin County, and open space in particular, do more of what they've begun doing. They're partnering with the Forest Service to steward North Star Preserve. They're actually hiring a forest ranger. I would like to see open space and trails do that in our wilderness areas, like Maroon Bells, that's just getting hammered, and the Four Pass Loop, and West Maroon Pass, and some of the other areas around our area where we actually can go in and work with the federal government on taking care of our most precious assets. So expanding wilderness, oh, sure, it would be great, but we've got some work to do to take care of what we have already.
Thank you. Now we'll turn to the audience and listeners for their questions. So come on up to the mic and introduce yourself.
My name is Killeen Bretman, and my question is how you both feel about growing marijuana in the valley. Thanks.
Scott, why don't you take that first?
I'm an advocate for legalized marijuana. I believe that it isn't just a fun thing, it's a health thing. I believe that it is a far more a safer drug than alcohol or basically anything else. My mother was hooked on the oxys at the end of her life for 5 years, and it was debilitating, and it was like the pain was created by the oxys, that she had to take the oxys to kill the pain. I believe marijuana is a real alternative to that. I believe that marijuana is far safer than all of the other pharmaceuticals and other drugs that are out there. I'm a giant proponent of it, and in fact, I think it's an industry that Pitkin County should be supporting, and so I'm generally in favor of it, but we have to respect caucus views. You know, individual neighborhoods have their own choices, and I think we should respect that. So, you know, it's something to think about. There's an agricultural component to it, and we talk about our agricultural heritage. So it's a mixed bag, Killeen, but it's a great question.
Greg, would you like to respond to that question about whether you can grow, should grow marijuana in Pitkin County?
Well, it is interesting. I think it should be left to the caucuses, and I think in addition to the caucuses being able to decide, because we already have caucuses with difference. The Emma caucus, for instance, is not in favor of marijuana grows in their neighborhood, and they already have some serious concerns. The Crystal River caucus has ranchers and farmers who are in favor of it, and they think they should be able to grow whatever they want as long as it's done properly. The concerns that come up are security, for one. Grows are still pretty valuable things, and there is, you don't see people going out and stealing corn crops, but you hear about marijuana crops being ripped off. The lighting, if you're going to be growing with greenhouses, for instance, you have greenhouses, you've got lighting, you've got energy, pollution, noise. So there are a lot of concerns there. The last thing I'd say is if these caucuses abut each other and they disagree, there should be safety zones within the caucuses so you know if your caucus is right next to the grow and the next neighbor, there's a no man's land. So there's a buffer.
Thank you. Jack, you have a question?
Jack Hatfield. Well, Scott, you seem to be a real strong proponent of housing, and you have stated many a time that you feel mitigation is going to be one of the mechanisms, and probably, apparently what I've heard, the main mechanism to finance it. Have you done any study about what the current and previous Board of Commissioners have done on this issue? We found that you really have a difficult time with mitigation because there's a legal component called nexus, and you must be able to prove that there are links between use and need and, you know, many, many different factors. So if your mitigation idea does not produce enough money, where's the money coming from to buy down free market?
Try to answer that in 1 minute.
Okay. Well, I mean, specifically studying what previous commissioners have done, no. But what I do know is the city of Aspen charges a lot more than the county does. In the city of Aspen, if you do 2,500 square feet above grade, you pay about $140,000 in mitigation fees. In the county, if you build 5,750, you're paying virtually nothing, 5,750 feet. That seems like an opportunity to me. I also believe that there are other opportunities in terms of TDRs, and I like the housing credit program that's been developed by the city, which is a program which encourages private developers to build affordable housing and then sell those housing credits to developers for other things. So, you know, Jack, in terms of where does the money come from? I don't know exactly. I'm just one guy trying to run for county commissioner to do the best I can do. But what I'll be doing is looking for every available opportunity to create these opportunities. And I think individuals can do it out of their own homes, too, by the way.
Any other questions from the audience? Chip, would you like to come up to the mic? State your name.
All right, Chip.
Chip Cummins, American Renewable Energy Institute. I'd like to have the Greg and Scott perhaps react to transportation and trying to get people who come all the way from Rifle or beyond on a commute out of cars. And I know that RAFT is doing a pretty good job moving people, but in terms of carbon mitigation, would you support EV charging points in accessible locations throughout the county? Could we even talk about, at some point, a train?
Should I go?
Greg, start that.
I'll start that. You know, the train has been discussed for decades, and I love the idea of a train. I think of European trains and how well they've worked, and they work because they're heavily subsidized by the governments of the countries they're in. And so I think if we do a train, certainly it would require that. There's talk that with the entrance to Aspen, solution that's happening now. Just the cost of a train from the intercept lot to Aspen is, it's over $600 million. So imagine a train from Rifle. I don't think anybody is going to be prepared to foot that bill. But what you brought up was very interesting, EV charging stations. I would love to see an electric fleet of vehicles, and I expect we're going to soon. Once again, they could be autonomous, they could be personal vehicles, but yes, EV charging. And additionally, maybe I'm out of time. So.
Chip, it's a great question. I think locally, you know, in this world, housing is a super big issue to all of us, but in the world, we're talking about renewable energy. I'm an anti-fossil fuel guy. I believe that if we really paid the cost of fossil fuels, you know, we'd be paying $10, $20, $30 a gallon at the pump, not $3. And if we were paying those kind of monies, we'd be figuring out solutions that would cover everywhere we go, every single component, every single movement. Specifically, what I would be looking to do would be to work with experts in the field to try to come up with as many alternatives as we can to reduce our carbon footprint and to eliminate fossil fuels. We got to fight them in the wilderness. We got to fight them in Thompson Divide. We've got to fight them everywhere we can to eliminate fossil fuels and put the real cost. Can we work with the state to increase a fuel tax? Can we create other alternatives that would really create the momentum behind us getting out of the fossil fuel business and into the renewable energy business?
Thank you. Now I'll consider this like the lightning round of questions.
Has it been already?
Who the assistant secretary to the county manager?
Try to do it. No, we won't do it that way. That's gotcha right there. Try to do this in 30 seconds or 45. What was the last decision made by the commissioners that you don't agree with, Greg?
Interesting. I think the last decision I would say that I'm having trouble with was the decision to build the county building. It seemed like it was just too big and it wasn't quite necessary. I think there have probably been some more recent ones, but that's 30 seconds.
What about what you've agreed with? What decision are you proud of them for making recently, this year?
Oh, wow. I have to think about it. You know what? They're doing hard work. I'll pass on the question because I don't have one in particular. But I do say that I trust and like and appreciate the work they're all doing.
Great, Scott. What's
I disagree with them not participating more in housing. I think they need to step up and really honor the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority partnership. It is actually called the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority, not just the Aspen Housing Authority. So I disagree with that. Now, I'm not sure how recent that decision was. I'm going to agree with a really hard decision that they had to come to, and that was when the Snowmass Capitol Creek caucuses split. That was a very contentious issue. It was neighbor against neighbor, community or drainage against drainage. And I thought the commissioners handled it exceptionally well. They were reacting to a really difficult situation, and I think they did an amazing job on that.
Great. Okay, so I have a final question, which I was consider your closing statement. Try to do it in a minute and a half. One minute. I'm an undecided voter, so win me over. I mean, what does a Pitkin County Commissioner, how do you have an impact on the average citizen on a daily basis? Greg, go. You get one.
Okay. I think really what this election comes down to is it's I like to think of it as about the essence and the soul of our community. And I have to say I admire Scott for coming out and doing this, and so I know that we've got two great choices here, two good choices at least. I think the voters must decide which candidate has the vision and has demonstrated the discipline and the judgment over the years as a resident of the Valley. It's a community not driven by the convenience of a quick buck speculation or rampant growth, but one that seeks balance and respect for the environment and our community of responsible citizens. It's up to us to carry that vision forward, and I want to do it for my children, and I want to do it for the citizens. I want to make sure that Aspen doesn't become the next oversized road resort. It takes vision and discipline from one generation to the next. I will never forget that we're a community. We should not be treating it like a commodity.
Okay. Scott,
Well, Carolyn, I want your vote because, first of all, about all of the housing stuff I've talked about, my commitment to environmentalism, I think that I've tried to make a very clear and poignant commitment to that, and the supporters behind me, I think, reinforce that. There was a great county commissioner by the name of Bob Child years ago, and I was always impressed by Bob. He was he just came off as just a very introspective guy, and one of the things he always used to say is, when you make a decision, think about how that decision affects the next seven generations of the community. And that's what I'm trying to do. When I put together housing ideas and work with people, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to think of the next generations. What's the next, the people who come next, not just our generation, and how is it good for us, but the succeeding generations and their kids. I also think I'm a collaborator. I think we should do a biodiversity master plan under the open space and trails so that we can not only master plan all of these things, but that creates a venue for us to create collaborations with all those people throughout the county who will participate in it.
Okay. Bonus lightning round. Huh. Very quickly, ask Scott a question, Greg, and you can do the same, Scott, and answer within 30 seconds.
Wow, I think he's asked all my questions. I guess my question would be, how do you define a local? Who's a local? Who isn't a local? I want to ask that one again.
Sure. We're all local, Greg. And if you have to ask that question, I'm almost wondering about your qualifications, but yours are impeccable. No, we're all local. And you know, I think Mick Ireland really said it best. And there was a debate going on, I don't know, 10 years ago, and there was, how many years do you have to be a local? And there was all this conversation going back and forth. Mick Ireland said, and I thought this was the best, local is as local does. You can be here 2 weeks and be an enlightened local, and you could be here 40 years and be a prick. Can I say that on the radio? I mean, I've gotten in the gondola with old timers who think they own this place, and I'm sorry, that's not the way it works. Local is as local does. I think we all know it when we see it. We all know it when we feel it, and that's my answer to your question.
And do you have a question for Greg?
Yes. So, Greg, I'm still trying to figure out how you're saying no growth, you're saying no speculation, you're saying don't commoditize the community. What are you going to do about the unincorporated portions of Pickens County where there's still 40 to 50% of that left to build that's free market housing? What are you going to do? It's easy to say no grow, but what are you going to do about it?
That's a good question. I'm not prepared. I don't have a solution to that yet. I do know that we have done it in the past. We have downzoned. We have people who think that perhaps some of our programs have gone the wrong direction. Maybe the TDR program has gotten a bit corrupted or a bit out of control. I would like to look at all these things, but I can't tell you I have all the answers. And it'd be disingenuous to say that. I want to explore them all. I'm concerned about it. And those are my biggest concerns. I'd like to just finish that with saying, you know, the thing that I would like to say is community first. It's about community. For everyone who participates and contributes, I think that's what you're getting to when you say locals first.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that's all the time we have. Just a reminder, this is a mail-in ballot election, so if you haven't received your ballot by the end of the week, log on to pickandvotes.org. Ballots must be returned to the county clerk by 7 p.m. on November 8th. This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. And you've been listening to a live debate from the Red Bricks Art Center. I'm Carolyn Sacharyson. If you've missed part of the debate among the candidates running for Pickens County Commissioner, Greg Poschman and Scott Ryder, you can go to aspenpublicradio.org later and hear a recording of it. And tune in tomorrow night at 6 p.m. for a debate with the candidates running for the Garfield County Commissioner, moderated by Randy Essex, the publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent, followed by live coverage from NPR of the final presidential debate at 7. We now join Fresh Air. Have a great night.